Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
All right, well, this morning, we're going to be talking about loving one another deeply in this series that we've been in, and we're going to focus on correcting one another. That doesn't really sound like all that much fun. It's actually a significant part of love, and we're going to talk about what it means to correct one another. Last week, we kind of primed the pump. For those of you who were here, we talked about the importance of forgiving one another. And part of the reason for that was I knew where we were headed this week. And let's learn how to forgive before we start correcting each other, so that way when we correct each other, we can lots of grace and love and bless you, brother. Correction is actually help. We've all got blind spots. Some of them we're kind of blind to on purpose, and some of them we're just really totally, we don't see them. And either way, we have them, and we really need help. We actually need help. And the Lord, see, this is not a really popular Western thought in church culture, but the Lord actually positions us with other believers so that there will be people close enough to us that could help us, that there will be people in our lives that could correct us so that we could actually be better off. You want to be better off. And God has desires for you that include you being corrected, that include some of those areas, some of those blind spots being amended and ministered to and dealt with and healed and overcome. There's things in my life that are in a good spot today that were in a really bad spot before I received some correction. And I'm so thankful because of what it's meant for me, the freedoms that it's given me, the freedom of thinking and perspective, the joy that I'm no longer hurting people in those ways. I've found new ways to hurt people. That there's areas that have grown, and it's because of getting corrected by a brother or a sister in the Lord and heeding the correction. It's a really important part of love. Let's put up Proverbs 15, 31 through 33. Proverbs, as a whole, is a really helpful book talking about this. I'm really grateful for the foundation that I've got, and I'm kind of saying this as an advertisement to you. Early on in the Lord, I don't remember, maybe within the first year, maybe in the first few months, somebody said, you ought to read a proverb a day. There's 31 Proverbs, there's 31 days. I was like, great. I just started doing it. I did it for, I don't know, 8 or 9 years. In addition to whatever else I was reading. I was reading a proverb a day, and it got ingrained in me. And I'm so grateful because it's a wisdom book. It will keep you balanced. There's so much in the book of Proverbs that will keep you from being a fool. And this is a big piece of it, is the subject of giving correction and receiving correction so that we can actually wind up walking with the Lord. So here's Proverbs 15, 31. Whoever heeds life-giving correction will be at home among the wise. Those who disregard discipline despise themselves. But the one who heeds correction gains understanding, and humility comes before honor. We're going to look at a lot of these pieces kind of broken down in this session, but I just wanted to start off with that opener of life-giving correction. That's really what's going on. It's life-giving. A significant part of love, it's to keep people from harm. That's the reason that we would give somebody a corrective word. It's not actually so they'd stop annoying us. It's actually so we could be life-giving, so we could help them. We could benefit them and bless them and strengthen them. Put up this verse in Proverbs 23. Now, I know this verse is about disciplining children, but if you can understand the overall principle of what's being communicated here, it's just as applicable to receiving a correction from a friend. It's just as applicable. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish them with the rod, they will not die. Punish them with the rod and save them from death. Correction is actually about keeping us from harm. That's the reason correction is important. It's one of those things where it's like we train our kids to eat their vegetables. Eventually, they learn to like them. They need to eat them. They don't really like them on the front end, but that doesn't matter. They got to eat them veggies. Those things are good for them. And as time goes on, we grow to be far more open to, receptive to receiving correction. Initially, we hate it. We actually hate it because we're foolish. We hate it because we're immature. Now, our culture, even Christian culture, will beat the drum loudly. You're your own person. You do you. Live your truth. Don't let anybody tell you what to do. Be your own man. It's like, that is arrogance that is going to get just so just shut down before the throne when we stand before him. We want to be those that are correctable, teachable, soft in heart. And it's life-giving rebuke. It's life-giving correction. This passage saves us from death, from harm. We want to be those that can give it in order to save our friend from harm, and we want to be those that can receive it and receive it as words of wisdom that will help save us from harm. That's what's really going on. That's why this is such a big one another. This is a on the one another's list, correct one another. It's a really big one. It really matters because without it, we're just a bunch of fools allowed to go on in our folly and no one's ever checking one another. That's not good at all. It's wisdom. It's good for there to be correction. And we're called to do it. Proverbs 27, verse 6. This is a beautiful way to approach the subject of correction. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. Think about in this context of correction, which that's what this verse is about, this context of correction, how normal it is for somebody to be doing whatever they're doing that's not right, and for us to just applaud it or say nothing, we're actually being an enemy multiplying kisses. We're not helping them at all. It says this, though, wounds from a friend can be trusted. When one of you goes to one of you or comes to me or me to you, and says, listen, this is something that could be better. This is something that could be stronger. Here's an area. Here's a blind spot. Here's something that you're not doing the way that it really could, should be done. It is folly bound up in our heart to despise that discipline. It is folly. It is actually, we should trust that and go, you know what? I don't really like it because it hurts, it stings, but I know you are a friend to me. And these are wounds that I can trust. This is good. This is wise. I am so concerned for our souls in relationship to not our salvation, but we stand before the Lord and we did all these things that had great merit, but we had all this folly bound up in our heart because we were not correctable. We stand before the Lord and we despised discipline. We stand before the Lord and we were not malleable, teachable. Jesus of himself said, I am meek and lowly. That we would be people that could receive correction. It's for our good. I just have seen it so many times in my life because I've been a dummy, so I've got a lot of reason to be corrected. And whenever I've responded rightly to that correction, I'm better. I'm stronger. My heart is softer. It is good. It is wisdom. It's not fun. I'm not here to advertise correction is fun. I'm here to advertise correction is wisdom. It is good. It is good for the soul. It is good for you. It's just so contrary to how we naturally think because we really don't like to be told we're doing something wrong. I don't like it, but I've learned to understand, I'm glad you told me I'm doing something wrong because now at least I've got a chance to deal with it. And I can process it. But we've got such a natural tendency when someone tells us we're doing something wrong, we go, you're doing something wrong, like a two-year-old having a tantrum. Like, no, no deflection. Let's just, you know what? You're probably right. Help me. Or just that we wouldn't be pointing the finger like, man, it's good for us. I've just found too, even when I've been told I'm doing something wrong, and as I go back and I reassess it, because this has happened a couple of times, I go back and I assess it and I go, actually, I don't think they're right on that point. It still was good for me. The humility of being told, Brad, you're not awesome all the time, everywhere. The humility of being somebody pointing something and saying, this area, this isn't good. That is good for me. That is good as healthy for me. It's healthy for you too. Not a lot of fun, but it is wisdom and it is good. We're called to instruct one another. Part of this instructing one another is actually a preemptive effort so we wouldn't have to be corrected later. Let's look at this. This is Romans 15, 14. This is another one of the one another's in the New Testament. I myself am convinced, my brothers and sisters, that you yourselves are full of goodness, filled with knowledge, and competent to instruct one another. Now, why would a group of believers instruct one another? Shouldn't that just be the senior leader's job or the small group leader's job? No, it's the job of the body. We're to instruct one another. See, that instruction, the difference between correction and instruction, it's a first go. It's the first round. Hey, look, this is how you do this. Correction is, hey, remember that thing we talked about last week? You're not doing it. You got to do that. That's a good thing. See, instruction's actually preemptive. It helps us. And we're supposed to instruct one another. It's not just a teaching platform. It's not just people with microphones or people who are leading small groups. We're to instruct one another in just the ways of life and how we do stuff and how we just process. Like, this is good. It's supposed to just be such a normal part of culture. It's not supposed to be some scary moment. Oh, I have to have an instruction moment with them or I have to have a correction. It's just supposed to be like normal talk. It's supposed to be such a normal part of life. The fact that we've compartmentalized it and relegated it to some like scary, sacred, only happen, you know, once a year kind of a thing and with fear and trembling means we'll never do it. If it's just normal, like, hey, you said this, you know, that kind of sounds like this. Hey, you did this. Are you aware of how that got interpreted? Hey, when you did this, this hurt me this way. Why is that so hard for us? This should be normal. This is good. This is healthy relationship stuff. It shouldn't ever escalate to some big old thing. We ought to be interacting with this, correcting and instructing. It's for our good. It's for our good because we don't want to be the one to say it. It's for our good to press past that and be the one to say it to the person that needs to hear it. It's good for both parties. This is normal. Part of the reason that there might be any weirdness about this is because of how infrequent it is. Now, I mean, you're not going around looking for problems, so it's like, oh, I'm going to correct 10 people today. I'm setting the record. I'm going to have the record in our community. That might be a great way to have some other issues of forgiveness that we might need to have with you. It's not like that. It's just as stuff comes up, like, see something, say something, you know? It's like, let's just deal with it, you know, as it comes along. We're called to admonish one another. Look at Colossians 3:16. Admonish, by the way, means to caution or counsel not to do something. That's what admonish means. It's don't do something. That's what admonish is. And to do it in a way that's not so harsh. I mean, it's, you know, it's relational, but here's what it says. Let the message of Christ dwell in you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom. As you teach, that's just everything about Jesus, and admonish, warn, counsel. Hey, don't do this. Don't be like that. Don't respond this way. It's just supposed to be a normal part of Christianity. I mean, Paul's just talking to the Colossians just in passing. He's like, hey, you've got Christ in you. Because you have Christ in you, you're a different people. Because you're different, this is another way that the kingdom operates that's different than those that don't have the Holy Spirit living in them. Teach and admonish one another. Do that just as a normal part of life. But if the goal is that we would be strengthened, that we would be better, that we would be challenged in a way that actually refines us and causes our hearts to be more free, causes us to love Jesus more. If that's the actual goal, then this is gold all day long. To be admonished, we ought to welcome that instead of try to hide from it. I mean, I do not like it. I mean, I'm feeling that I want to hide from it in my own soul. Because it's not like I enjoy when somebody comes up and pushes on something and says, hey, this is something about you. This is something you said. This is something that you did. This is something you didn't do. It's not like I enjoy that. But man, I want to get to a point where I see it as so much wisdom that I welcome it and go, bring it. I know it will do me good. See, this is wisdom. This is maturity. Let's not camp out in immaturity the rest of our Christian life. Like, let's move on. Let's advance in the kingdom. Let's be those that are mature, where we could look at what is truly good for us and we could straight up take it and say, yep, I'm in. It's good. It's a little sharp. It hurts a little bit, but I'm in. Well, now let's look at some ground rules. Hopefully we're sold on the fact that it's good. Now let's look at some ground rules and how we're supposed to do it. Ephesians 4:15 and then 4:25, speaking about the same thing, really. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become, in every respect, the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. How do we become mature? We speak the truth in love. So what is the truth in love? The truth in love, it's talking about this correction issue, but it's to correct in love. That we would use our words, that we would, when we're the one giving the correction, we would speak that truth in love in every way that we can, that our motives are good, that our the way that we're presenting it is a little bit like refined, that it's been, you know, we've been paying attention to how do I communicate this in love. It's not enough to just speak the truth, that we've got to speak the truth to one another in love. And I mean, of course, that makes sense because we all receive it better, you know, honey than vinegar, you know? I mean, that's just kind of how things work. Similarly, Ephesians 4:25, therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to your neighbor, for we are all members of one body. This idea of speaking the truth, we want to speak the truth. For you to see something in your brother, see something in your sister that is not excellent, and for you to say nothing, you're not speaking the truth. But oh boy, you better say it in love. Because it's not enough that you just come out of the gates shooting and get your point across. You're a dum-dum for sure, and here's why. We got to communicate in a way that could be received in the best way that we can. And we're really probably going to be all on a journey of learning to speak the truth, because if that's not something that we're used to doing, then we're probably going to be kind of bad at it to start with. And secondly, to do it in love. If that's not something that we're used to doing, when we say it, it's probably going to come out a little bit sharp. We're going to have to learn that, like work that muscle. But this is what maturity looks like. A mature body, one that can speak that truth in love, to give it and receive it. I mean, it's kind of funny because I think part of the reason that we're like, we feel bad or we feel some measure of guilt when somebody tells us something is because in that moment, we're forgetting they're just as jacked up as you are. Like, they've got issues too. Who knows who corrected them yesterday? Who knows what they did right before this correction moment? Like, we have this, it's a little weird because if we could just receive it as, oh, you're a jacked up human, and I'm a jacked up human, and you're telling me about how I'm jacked up, and next week I'll tell you about how you're jacked up. It makes it so much more normal. And that's really where it ought to be. It's not about better or worse. That's all the distraction of the enemy in order to get us to say nothing, in order to get us to hear nothing. That's all a distraction. Instead, we're all weak. We're all made of dust. We've all got our issues. We've all got our blind spots. This is how it is, all of us. But when life-giving correction comes, we want to receive it. Next, Ephesians 4:32. See, Ephesians got a lot to say about this. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you. Be kind and compassionate. I'm thinking about in the way that we're communicating to the one that we're correcting. Be kind. Be kind. Think about it. Maybe in the moment that they do whatever or say whatever or what, maybe that's not the right moment because you need a little bit of time to put your thoughts together in order to figure out how a way to make it kind when you speak it. Kindness is an essential part of the way that we communicate correction. Kindness. And again, if it's so new, like if you're like, I've only corrected one person in my whole life once, well, then you don't have a lot of experience at this. So it makes sense that if tomorrow you're going to do it, you're probably not going to be epic at it. That's okay. Get epic at it by being bad at it for a while. And learn. Try to communicate in kindness. Look what else it says. 1 Corinthians 13:4, love is kind. It's important that we communicate in love, in kindness. And so correction is important, but we don't want to just let it be about the fact of whatever is out of place. You did this. See ya. We want to communicate in kindness. I like the way that Paul wrote in Ephesians, kind and compassionate. I think that compassionate is a little bit of slow down enough to ask yourself the question, if I had this wrong in my life, how would I want somebody to say it to me? I mean, that's a really good barometer. That's a really good helpful, like, how would I want to hear this? Like, if it were me, because it will be next week, if it were me, how would I want to hear this? How would it be easiest for me to hear this? So that's what compassion is. You're looking at the person and you're seeing them and their perspective, their point of view, and go, they're about to be corrected. If I were going to be corrected, how would I want to be corrected? Having compassion in the way that we communicate, a correction. That's a really good ground rule. Be compassionate to one another. Look at this one. Love does not dishonor. This is 1 Corinthians 13:5. Love does not dishonor others. When we're correcting, there's a lot of ways we could correct that would actually cause dishonor. Openly in front of a group of people, it's probably a good way to make an enemy. You know, there's a lot of ways, even in the way that we're correcting the person. Like, I'll give you a for instance. You always do this. That's a hard way to hear it. This is who you are, and you need to fix yourself. That's dishonoring of them. Say, this is something that happens, or this is something I've seen you do, or this is something that happened yesterday. Those are real and true, but they're not dishonoring. You're not making this whole thing about this is your whole identity, this is who you are. You're saying, look, this happens. This happens sometimes. Like, this is something you're prone to. Okay. Like, but don't cause dishonor. Again, sometimes you're just going to say it wrong, and you're going to have to fix that. Part of the way the Lord just loves this is the ping pong match here that happens. You say something to correct somebody. You did your best, and it was horrible. They heard it at about 50% because you said it bad. Now they're mad at you for saying it bad. Now they come back and correct you for saying it bad. And you have a choice to either go, no, you're the dummy. Or you go, you know what? I did say that bad. I'm sorry. You're right. Now that we've accepted the fact that I said it wrong, can we circle back on you helping you with that other 50%? It's ping pong. I mean, and the Lord loves it because it builds humility in the body. The Lord is after humility. We want to just get out of this thing unscathed. It is like our desire in life to never have any problems, never have any trouble, never get any bumps, bruises, never have any awkward moments. And the Lord's like, oh, no, I designed those. I love them. It's my favorite TV show to watch. You in awkward, you getting bumped, you working out your salvation with fear and trembling. It's good for us. We don't like it, but we got to stop being afraid of it. Like, we just got to face it and just own it. 1 Corinthians 13:6, next verse says, love does not delight in evil. I think sometimes a motive for correction can be, get ya, I got ya. We want to get that worked out of our heart. It's not about putting somebody in their place. It's not about fixing somebody or trying. It's love. This is something that's inappropriate. It's out of place. It's something that could be strengthened. You know, most of the time that I've been corrected, and this, I didn't think about it till now. Most of the time I've been corrected, it's not been about blatant sin issues. It's been about the way I've carried myself. Most of the corrections I've received. It's not been, Brad, you're a sinner, you did this Bible verse wrong, and you're bad. It's mostly been the way I presented something, the way I carried myself. It's mostly been things that are like arguably dismissible. But the way that I carried myself hurt somebody. The way that I carried myself caused a problem for somebody or was a bad example or whatever. And that should be corrected. So I just want to give you this. We're not just talking about blatant sin issues. These are in our ins and outs and the way that we interact and ways that we hear a friend talking. And we go, hey, I know it's just us right now, but you want to be careful to not say that. Like, that's not good for you and that's not good for them. And angels are watching. Like, it's little things. It's little areas. The way we carry ourselves and present ourselves. Well, what happens when we heed correction? This is glorious stuff right here. Isaiah 53, verse 6. We've got to recognize we all, like sheep, have gone astray. All of us. Each of us turned to our own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Speaking of the cross and the grace that we receive by receiving Jesus. But the point that I'm trying to make is, we all have issues, and we all need to turn back again and again and in new ways, and ways that we're in environments today that we weren't in 3 years ago, and we in this new environment, we've got opportunities to make mistakes we weren't able to make in the other environment because the context was different. And now we've got new opportunities to learn how to turn back, new opportunities to listen, to humble ourselves. Well, what happens when we humble ourselves, when we receive it? Proverbs 15:31, I told you we'd circle back on that entry verse. Proverbs 15:31, whoever heeds life-giving correction will be at home among the wise. Remember this on both sides. It is life-giving to correct, and it is life-giving to be corrected. When we receive or we give correction, we are actually participating in life-giving. That's a different perspective than scary thing I have to say, scary thing that's being said to me. Life-giving words that are essential, coming and going. Life-giving. Think about that in relationship to this correct one another. We are actually transferring life. It is life-giving correction. It's also called the way of life. Proverbs 6:23, for this command is a lamp. This teaching is a light, and correction and instruction are the way to life. I don't want to just live saved. I want to live in the way of life. I want to live in a way that is experiencing the life of Jesus in the day-to-day, in the mundane, in all the areas of my soul. Correction is the way to life. Man, it feels like death in the moment. That's because we've got such a wrong perspective. It should be celebrated. It should be embraced. It's life-giving. See, I think part of the reason that Solomon went so hard on this point in the book of Proverbs is because he knows how hard it is on the human heart to receive correction. He's like, let's write a whole book about redrafting what the definition of correction is, what's actually transferring, what's actually going on. It's the way to life. Correction is the way to life. It is life-giving. Oh, this is perspective we need. Because this changes it. When my friend comes to me, or my wife, and says, hey, you did this thing, buddy. It's like, I did the thing. This is life. We're celebrating life right now. I mean, might make the moment goofy, but maybe that'd be helpful. I don't know. Like, it's life-giving instruction. It's not bad. It's not bad. Tell your soul to submit and receive it. It's good for you. Every time, it is good for you. Proverbs 15:32 says it's the way to gain understanding. Those who disregard discipline despise themselves. What a awful thing. For the Bible to identify that any person that's following God could be described as despising themselves. And it's not talking about shame or condemnation. It's talking about an unwillingness to receive correction. The person that's unwilling to receive correction despises themselves. Proverbs 15:32, those who disregard discipline despise themselves, but the one who heeds correction gains understanding. I want to gain understanding. And I'll tell you, in the times that I've received correction, I have. I have grown in my faith. I've grown in my understanding. I've grown in the way that I understand now how to relate to people and the way that people perceive me. When we receive that life-giving correction, it actually brings life. And we grow in understanding. But the one who refuses to receive that correction despises themselves. I mean, it's really kind of an interesting situation when we put ourselves on the high horse, like, how dare they say this to me? What's really happening is the Lord's going, you're despising yourself currently. High horse, equal, self-despise. Like, oh my gosh, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to be in the spot where I'm despising myself because I won't receive correction, which is actually for my good. I'm calling it bad. This is part of the final generation that's going to say they will call evil good and good evil. I mean, again, it's at the low end of the pole, but it's looking at something that's actually good, correction. A person correcting me is good for me, but instead I'm despising it and I'm calling it bad. No, I don't want that. Don't do that to me. It's really good. Not a lot of fun, but really good. And you're better off. Every time I've responded, there's been a correction and I've responded, I have wound up better off. Normally takes me a little bit of time to actually see it. When I say a little bit of time, I don't mean a week. Normally, it's a season later. Maybe not even a year. Maybe it's 2-3 years, but I look back and go, yep, that was a mistake. I am better off. And I'm glad that I see that clearer now. I was having a dialogue with the Lord this morning about something that somebody gave me a correction on something. It was the way I handled something. And at the time, I was like, no, I don't really know. I don't really see that, but okay. I mean, thank you for saying it. I know you're trying to help. And it was some years later, I mean like 7 or 8 years, because it happened this morning. And I was like, oh, yeah, I do see that differently. They were right. This is right. Like that's. So just give yourself a little bit of time, because your litmus test doesn't want to be, do I feel like it's right a week later? You know? Wisdom takes a little bit of time to settle in sometimes. All right. What happens when we don't heed correction? We'll end with this. Proverbs 10:17. Whoever heeds discipline shows the way to life, but whoever ignores correction leads others astray. Part of what I think is in the culture of the church, I don't mean so much ours, but ours too, in the culture of the church is there's been so much leading one another astray in relationship to don't receive correction. That's not good. People shouldn't be able to tell you what to do. They should mind their own business. There's been so much patting that on the back that it's led others astray. And we have a church culture that despises correction and despises giving it and despises receiving it. We're actually leading others astray. But this is Bible verse here. Whoever ignores correction will lead other people further away from God. Dude, I definitely don't want that on my resume. We have got to be those that receive correction. Proverbs 15:10, stern discipline awaits anyone who leaves the path. The one who hates correction will die. That's as bad as it gets. Die. I don't want to die. Whether that die is straight up croak, or it's operate in the spirit of death, or it's some area of deterioration, whatever is going on here, I want nothing to do with it. And the statement is, if you hate correction, you are actually entering into the path of death. This issue of correction is kind of like a lot bigger deal than maybe we thought. The way that we handle it, the way we receive it, it's really a really big deal. I want to walk in the light. I want to walk in the truth. I want to have my heart alive. I do not want to walk in the way of death. Proverbs 12:1, the best youth group message ever. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge. Whoever hates correction is stupid. Don't be stupid. Don't be stupid. I think that's it. I looked because I was like, that word stupid's not in the Bible that many times. I was like, I think it's in like 4 or 5 times. And all the other context, it's not calling a person that. It's calling their activity that, or Solomon saying, like, don't be stupid yourself, you know? But this is the only time where it's straight up like, if you hate correction, you're stupid. It's kind of fun. Hey, there it is. It's right there. Similarly, the Bible says it's the activity of fools. A fool spurns a parent's discipline. Whoever heeds correction shows prudence. It's foolish. It's not neutral. It's foolish to not receive correction. Proverbs 13:18, last verse we'll look at. Whoever disregards discipline comes to poverty and shame. These are like really intense. So what's the bottom line? Worship team, you can come on up. Bottom line is to correct each other is an act of love. It's actually an act of love. So when someone comes and corrects you, even if they're not so great at it, you need to be receiving it primarily as an act of them loving you. They saw the Bible. They saw what it says. They came to correct you as a gift to you, to help you. It's an act of love. Second, to receive that correction is an act or is an expression of trust. Mostly trust in the Bible, trust in the Lord, trust in your friend too. But it's an act of trust that the correction that they're giving, it's a trust that, Lord, they're actually seeing something in me that could be better, could be stronger. And we receive it. It's wisdom to do so. To heed correction is wisdom. To receive a corrective word and to actually respond, it is wisdom. Even if you don't feel like it, even if you don't like it, it is wisdom. You could actually, on the day where you're getting corrected, you could actually have your fellowship moment with the Holy Spirit if you respond rightly. I'm being corrected for this thing I said or did or didn't do. But really what's happening is because I'm saying yes, I'm growing in wisdom in this very moment. Lord, I'm fellowshipping with you. I'm giving this to you. I'm responding to you. And this is, I am actually maturing in this moment of ache. I'm maturing and responding in wisdom. Correction is good. Correction is life-giving. Let's be a community that gives and receives correction.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.